From the center of the universe, Toronto, Ontario, Canada, this is the SDM Show with your host, Rob Cairns. The SDM Show focuses on business, life, productivity, digital marketing, WordPress, and more. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and enjoy the show. Here is Rob.
Hey, everybody. Rob Cairns. I'm the CEO, founder, and chief creator of Amazing Ideas at Stunning Digital Marketing. In today's podcast, I sit down with Twitter expert Bridget Willard, my good friend, to talk about Twitter and one of her new books. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite drink, and I hope you enjoy this conversation. Hey, everybody, Rob Cairns here. I'm here with my friend Bridget Willard today, and we're going to talk about a little Twitter, and we might even dive into her latest book. How are you today, Bridget?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well. It's actually, you know, we were talking before we recorded a little bit about the world, and finally, Toronto's actually cooled down. We're a balmy 80 degrees today, which is at the time of this recording, which is pretty cool lately. We've been running about 100, 110 all summer, so better today. And how's Texas?
Oh, well, it's humid. You know, anything east of the Continental Divide is going to be humid. So
yeah,
I live in 72 degrees or 74 degrees every single day, thanks to the invention of air conditioning.
Yeah, it's the best invention going. What I didn't tell you is my favorite football team's from the Dallas area. We won't talk about them today. Anyway, can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself and your background and what you're working on these days?
Hey, y'all. I am Bridget Willard, and I have been doing business-to-business marketing since 2009. I specialize in Twitter management, and I have a Twitter course. I have a book, The Definitive Guide to Twitter Marketing. I double dog dare you to try it. And I manage client Twitter accounts, write. I've published, my voice. I tried to sing and get my voice all warmed up, but I've published 6 books so far, 2 with my partner in Germany, Warren Lane Nida, and we're going to do a 3rd this year. So I took a different route with the pandemic.
Yeah, that's a bit of an awesome to write a book. I haven't dived into that territory yet, and I've got enough journalists and writers in my family and in my circle, and they're all like, when are you going to write a book? And I said, maybe this year, maybe next year. So let's stop.
You can repurpose your podcast. Like, for example, the book that I put out last year in October, Keys to Being Social, that was originally 30 blog posts on my site. Yep. It took a lot of editing from me and my best friend, Sarah Pressler, to get it into, you know, a cohesive flow, because you know how it is. Wait, who was allowed to blog on my website in 2009? There were no keywords. There was like, who was that person? But, you know, like, we have content. We all have content that we can repurpose.
It's so true. And I mean, I'm at the time of this recording, I'm like 145 episodes in the podcast. So I've probably got a lot of content. So,
I mean, like, just riffing. What if you did like 30 things I learned from podcasting, and then each chapter features some insights you've gotten from each guest, and then you can link to the podcast episode and then do it on Kindle Create. And then the Kindle book will have links to your podcast. So it can actually be another, I know that's not what we're doing here, but I can't help myself.
It's all good, Bridget. You know, it's funny. One of my real sweet friends was a journalist with the Toronto Sun, which is one of the daily papers in Toronto. And he worked for the Sun for 25 years. He's well retired. And we forever talk about, and he's trying to give me a nudge to get off my butt and write a book. So you can keep going. It's all good. Let's talk Twitter. And I don't, So a little preamble. When I started on social media, I started with Twitter. I'm in, I got somewhere ungodly, like 16,000 followers, and, you know, that's fine. And then Facebook came along and a lot of people migrated. And I should tell you, I'm fed up with the Facebook game, except as a marketer, I have to be on Facebook to run Facebook ads. So I'll tell you that now. I'm even in a situation where if I post my own links off my own website on Facebook right now, I get told they don't meet community standards. That's funny. So what I'm actually doing is posting the actual podcast link on the podcast site to get around that problem. Wow. And Twitter, and I said to somebody about 6 months ago, I need to dive back into Twitter because I've let it go for a year and I'm much more happier. Why is that, do you think?
Why you're happier with Twitter?
With Twitter. Why do I prefer Twitter over Facebook?
Oh, yeah. Twitter is my favorite. So here's the thing. Twitter is where people go to have a conversation.
Yep.
It used to be when you logged into Twitter, it would say, you know, what are you thinking? Or start a conversation. Now when you log in on twitter.com, it says, what's happening? And then you click in the box and you can answer the question. Like, remember Facebook used to ask us, like, what's your status update? You know, and it seems like poppycock, a bunch of just nothing, right? But the thing is, and my late husband used to say this to me. He goes, social media, Bridget, is just talking to your neighbor over the fence. You talk to your neighbor over the fence about stupid stuff all the time. And when I say stupid stuff, I mean small talk. And when I say small talk, I mean the most valuable part of communication that exists. So here's the thing. In order to have a relationship, you have to have trust. Mm-hmm. And we have all these different variations of relationships, right? With businesses, with people, acquaintances. You know, I walk, the only people that really recognize me in my apartment is the guy and the kids next door and the maintenance guy, you know, because everybody's kind of locked in, right? They're still super cautious here in Texas, despite what you see on the news. So, like, and the thing is that that's still a relationship, you know? So a lot of people in the WordPress space feel that small talk is not valuable and that if you're not saying something valuable, then you shouldn't be saying anything at all, okay? However, you and I aren't going to start this podcast, Rob, and then be like, okay, well, let's figure out what to do with Afghanistan. It's you and me. We're going to figure it out right now. Like the UN didn't ask us. They're not even participating. You know what I mean? We're not going to like sit down and figure out the nuclear crisis in North Korea. It's not going to happen. Like we have to be like, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? Those are ways that we judge body language, tone, inflection to see if somebody is open to having more of a conversation. Right?
Yeah,
we've
so
all been on those dates or business meetings where it's like pulling teeth to find out what somebody wants to talk about, you know?
Yeah.
But on Twitter, they're like, this is what I think. And you have an opportunity to reply. And based upon those replies, you have an opportunity to build a relationship. Now, I recommend against trying to convert people to whatever way of thinking that you're doing complete, like it, politically or whatever. I mean, sometimes it's nice to know that there's people, there are like-minded people, right? But if you're doing it for business, think of it like a think tank, your colleagues, your peers. A lot of us in the WordPress community work from home or are solopreneurs, and those are our coworkers. So when you're nice on the internet, and I mean like polite, you know, maybe people don't like me. It's fine. You don't have to like me, but I do try with all of my heart to be polite. And there's that that creates a, and facilitates a conversation, Rob. So that's why it's, I think that's why Twitter is enjoyable. That's why I like it.
I would agree with you. And I kind of go down the list of people I know and I've met from Twitter. So one of my dearest friends is was one of the guys behind a lot of the early days of Toronto Police's move to social media. And he's now retired as a police officer, and he works for the Ontario Police Association, Police Association in his retirement, and he's gotten out of that. And he would tell you Twitter is invaluable. I've got a couple other friends from community perspective and nonprofits, and they would tell you Twitter's invaluable. And I actually think the conversations I have on Twitter with people are deeper than they are on Facebook. It's just the way it goes for me. I was having a conversation with Bob Dunn this morning, who's well known in the WordPress space. And Bob is another one who's recently been very public about not wanting to talk on Facebook and doing more and more on Twitter. And he's there more. Another guy in the podcast space is Joe Casabona. Joe is almost always on Twitter. I mean, it just goes on, right?
So. Yeah. I mean, I hate to blame the platform, because the platform is what we train it to do. I always say algorithms are like dogs. They do what you train them to do, right? LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, they do what you train them to do. The problem with Facebook is the culture is post and go. So I'm at a picnic, I take a selfie, I put it on Facebook, and I leave. It's very self-centered that way. Yep. Whereas when you're on Twitter, the same person, the behavior is different. Also, for me, like, I'm connected with a lot of people on Facebook that are family members and old friends, and I don't necessarily want to hear their opinions about whether or not I should get another tattoo, or if they like my hair blonde instead of dark. Or, yep. You know, like, I recently considered, like, telling Facebook that I'm bisexual. And I was like, oh, holy shit. I don't have the energy to deal with my Christian friends and all their opinions and all the DMs that are going to have, because I used to be a pastor's wife, right?
Yeah.
So I'm just like... So you mentioned earlier in the pre-show that I feel happier, that you see that I'm happier.
I see it every day, yeah.
Yeah, you're not the only one. A lot of why I left California was to leave the ghosts of my husband's family, of who he was, and me being in kind of a shadow of him. Not that I didn't love him or anything like that, but, like, you know, when you're a pastor, everybody wants to know about that guy, right? He's important. He was an important person to a lot of people. And I just don't want to live the church life anymore. I don't want to be around all that. And I needed to live somewhere where I chose where I live, instead of being born somewhere or being married and we have to go live somewhere else, right? So I'm making choices that are for me. And the community that I've found came from Twitter. And I will tell you, my very best friend, Jen Miller, met on Twitter. Sarah Pressler met on Twitter. Rhonda Nagard, that designed my website, and who is one of my best friends on this planet, Twitter.
Yep.
The person that we work with clients together and write books, Maureen Lane Nida, Twitter, from that WCEU hashtag 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And people are open to it.
They are. And that's the big thing. I mean, I have a good friend of mine who trains workplace education in Nova Scotia. And we've been out together multiple times. And where did we meet? Twitter. I mean, I can go on. And I think it's easier to find like-minded people on Twitter than any other platform, just because of the way things like hashtags are laid out, the way people interact with each other. I think it's an open platform. And frankly, one of the biggest things for me, Twitter is a news source every day. I have a Twitter list that has all kinds of journalists in it, all kinds of news outlets in it. And where do I go first thing in the morning to read the news? Twitter.
Yep. If I see a trending hashtag, I'm like, oh man, what happened? Because I'm busy looking at Twitter for my clients. Like yeah. I'm looking for WordPress news, e-commerce news, podcasting news, that kind of thing. I'm not looking at what's going on in Afghanistan. I was literally at Sarah's house a couple of weeks ago and she goes, how do you not know what's going on? I'm like, I listen to Yahoo Finance. I listen to the Wall Street Journal. Like yep. I have this app called Curio. And you get the Financial Times, Bloomberg, you know, Wired, yep. Science, all of that. And they read it. They read it at a podcast level. And I love listening to that because it's one subscription instead of me having to subscribe to the Wall Street Journal and The Economist and Bloomberg. And like it's all together and then somebody's reading it. And it's not like the fakey voice thing, you know. But so like, I know what's going on in the world. I know the dollar is down. I know that, but I have to make myself look at regular news when I see that hashtag or like, what's going on with this? What's going on with that? But I do the same thing, Rob. I have a news list.
Yeah.
But it gets overwhelming, you know, like we're already dealing with so much stuff just at close to home. It's,
oh yeah, the last year has been hard on many people, me included. I've gone through a separation that's headed to where it's headed, and you know, it's okay. I'm better off for it. I mean, I'm good, and COVID was an impact on that, but you know if. The way I look at life is if you can't support each other during tough times, how do you support each other during good times? So
you don't.
You don't. So, and we've all gone through tough times in life. And I think we just I think the way we can curate social media and Twitter makes it a little easier. For somebody that's a company that's on B2B, so that's business to business, why should they be on Twitter?
Oh my gosh, you don't even have a podcast long enough, but I'll be as succinct as I can.
Go ahead.
Number one is promoting your things, public relations, customer service, listening. Listening is what people don't do. You know, you can write a persona all you want, and that persona is essentially a stereotype or a bias. And you can actually find out what your audience does by putting them on lists and reading their tweets because everybody tells everything about themselves all the time. And yep. then also it's a great place for, you know, engagement of your customers, you know, building those relationships.
Yep.
And another thing I like to throw out at people is individual tweets. Individual tweets, not individual Facebook posts, not individual LinkedIn posts. Individual tweets are indexed by Google. So if you go searching for Bridget Willard, you're going to find my website. You're going to find a Twitter account. You're going to find my other Twitter account with a carousel of tweets. You're going to probably find like my books, YouTube, but it's right there. Just five tweets. That's what comes up in search results. I discovered this searching for Chinese New Year.
Okay.
And I forgot, like, it's, we don't call it that anymore. I grew up in California near the Bay Area, so we always called it Chinese New Year. That's what everybody called it. But Lunar New Year. And so I was like, you know, what year is it? I want to know, you know, I'm really... I like that it's the year of the ox, which is my birth year. So I saw a carousel of tweets from different news sources talking about Lunar New Year. Yes. And I was like, what is this? Oh, I mean, I knew that Google cared about it as off-page SEO, you know, as a ranking signal. But like being active, that's how people, you know, see you. Like that's how they discover who you are. It's essential because what's essential in B2B relationships?
Yeah, I would agree. I know if I plunk my name into into Google, my Twitter account comes out before my website, believe it or not. Yeah. And that's just the power of Twitter and the links on Twitter. I'm going to dive into something at the risk of creating a little controversy.
Willard is a controversy.
Yeah, I know that. But how do you feel, and I've got a bit of a take on this one, but I wanted yours, is how do you feel about Twitter censoring certain posts on Twitter? So the one that comes to mind was the former president of the United States. We just had a situation, I don't know if you know, but in Canada, we're in the middle of a political election and they censored a cabinet minister's tweet last week because they were misinformed. How do you feel about Twitter going down that road?
I mean, if you want to just censor hate speech, there's always going to be haters, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like censoring and suspending accounts that aren't of political leaders is a bias and part of a machine that I think is a little bit unfair. I wouldn't do it if I were on their Twitter board. I wouldn't do it. I know there's a lot of people that demanded that happen to Trump. But the thing is, they are a private company. It's their platform and they can do whatever they want. This is why we're always like, blog on your own website. And Twitter is a mini blog. This is why WordPress people are always about owning your own content, because you are a digital sharecropper every time you publish words on a third-party platform. I publish on BridgetWillard.com. I own the domain. I rent the hosting. I have backups every night.
Yep.
They can decide that they hate me. Hey, Google Ads just did this to me. And I don't even know why, because they won't tell you. I have been banned from having ads forever. And I think it's because I was promoting my book, How to Market Your Plugin. And they would suggest keywords. And I didn't put WordPress in there, but they said, here's 1,100 keywords. And I just said, accept them all. So it's kind of a trap, but I'm like, well, whatever. They don't get any money from me. Yep. You know, I'd rather advertise on a podcast like I did on the Matt Report. Somebody I know got the money, you know, somebody that could actually use the money instead of stupid Google, right? Yep. Then I'm like, well, sucks to be you, but the thing is, it feels unfair. It feels unjust to something that we trust. So I'm conflicted because they're a private company and they have the right to do whatever they want. I wish they were more active about, suspending actual spam accounts like John 657-24390. Like those are all spam.
Yeah. So my take is a little different. I actually have a tough time with this one. I think the private companies need, within reason, unless somebody's doing something absolutely illegal, not to get involved. And I mean that wholeheartedly. And so I'll give you an example. We were right now, do you know where the Taliban's going to communicate in the back channel? They're all using Twitter DMs. All of them. And the problem is Twitter hasn't done anything to get them out. And this is what I get upset at about.
Yeah, but they're mad about American and Canadian politicians. Like, hello, the Taliban is using Twitter.
Yeah, so that's the first part. And then I was reading, not that I care about the space, but if the biggest hot topic on Twitter in the last week has been the whole OnlyFans debate. If you've read that debate.
I have.
And again, I'm not advocating porn. So hear me out here. I'm not getting a stand. My problem with, again, OnlyFans doing what they did, as I said to a friend last night, is they decided to censor when it didn't suit them. Yet if they didn't have all that business that put them there, they wouldn't be where they are today. So
exactly. A friend of mine and I have been investigating and researching financial literacy in the sex industry.
Oh, don't even go there. That's
no, seriously, because if they start an LLC, then they can buy health insurance through the LLC, and you can have a tax write-off. That you can write off all of your costumes, your lashes, your plastic surgery, because it's what actors do, right?
Yep.
But you get into personalized porn, modeling, or actually being in a film, and it's taboo. Now, it's not illegal, and it's not prostitution. So they should have a right. And our Matt Mullenweg tweeted about that subject. I don't know if you saw it, but he was like, hey, don't be all upset with OnlyFans, Tumblr at all. Be upset with Visa, Discover, MasterCard.
He's actually right. I saw the tweet, and he's actually right. The payment processors are making it hard. But when it suited the big companies, they all took the money because it suited them. Because they get a percentage.
So how is Pornhub collecting payments? Like,
well, I was I've asked the question.
I'm being serious. Like, if you think about it from an objective standpoint, and I know that a lot of us in the WordPress community believe in democratizing publishing, right?
Yep.
These people have a right to the career that they've chosen.
Yeah.
Okay. As long as they're not being trafficked. Okay. This is their path, and that's what they're doing. They should be able to set it up however works best for them. Now, I also saw the tweets were like, create your own membership website.
Yeah.
Because then PayPal, you know, you can do it through PayPal, Venmo.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know which if I were a payment gateway, I would have been all about like, hey, we accept whatever business. It's going to be the same thing with the cannabis industry, because it's technically illegal in the United States because it's federally illegal, but certain states have allowed it. But still, you go to a pot store, you go to weedmaps.com, they're taking your credit card, they're taking cash.
It's the same thing in Canada. You can walk in Ontario, cannabis is legal. You can walk into a store that's sanctioned by the government with a debit card or credit card and pay for it there. And that's not an issue.
Yeah, so, my suspicion is disputing the card charges as fraudulent once your wife or husband finds out that that's what you're spending your money on. That's a different issue, right?
Yep.
Maybe MasterCard and Visa could be smart about it and have a insurance, you know, some kind of insurance plan against fraudulent back charges or something, or some kind of like, I agree to pay for this and decline my right to dispute
their charges.
Yeah. Be smart about it. Like, you know, of course you want to be, a fundamental Christian country anymore. And even if we were, it doesn't matter because it's not illegal. We have to separate what people can do and what they should do. Yes, you can auto post to all of your social media things with Jetpack as soon as you hit publish. But should you do it? Under no circumstances should you ever do that.
Yep.
It's not about good or bad. It's about strategy.
I would agree. So there's a couple interesting points. And one of the ones I wanted to talk about was, how do you feel about what I call live tweeting and, you know, writing the tweet and pushing a button and going to taking a client's site or tweets that matter and then saying, okay, I know these aren't going to change, and scheduling them. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah. Okay. Live tweeting. When I say live tweeting, I mean, I'm in a WordCamp talk. I'm watching the Oscars. I'm watching a presidential debate, which I used to do when I was heavily involved in politics in a former life. And I'm tweeting up quotes. To me, that's live tweeting. But tweeting organically in the moment versus scheduling, I think you need both. Now, there is a distinct difference between automation and scheduling. And some automation is good. So on my site, BridgetWillard.com, I'm using Revive Old Posts by Revive Social. Yep. And it goes through, and I'm always futzing with the amount of hours. It's always like some kind of prime number with a 0.5. Because if you do it every 8 hours, it's going to be the same time all the time. So I'm always like 37 point something, 17.5, 13.5. I'm always messing around with it. But anyway, so, and I love prime numbers. I don't know why. I just feel like they're special. So I schedule tweets for my clients. That's what they pay me to do. Like, I literally have 6 clients. I mean, I have more, but for the Twitter Basic package and Twitter Pro, I make a content calendar with like 1 to 3 tweets a day. It depends on what they pay for. And then they approve that calendar, and then I schedule it in Hootsuite. However, I am also paying attention between 7 a.m. and 10 p.m. I am looking for things to reply to. I'm looking for things to push out. Like today, I saw there's tickets for WordCamp US. So I retweeted that from several of my client accounts where it makes sense. Because you need the regularity, right? You need the regularity of publishing. But you also need that spontaneity, that like seeing somebody that said, oh, I just released this plugin, and just saying congratulations. It's a big deal. People can tell if you're not online.
Yeah, I would agree. And it's, and in being online, there's a 24/7 world too. So that adds to that mess even more to some degree. But the other thing I would say is, if you're going to schedule posts, you better be keeping an eye out on what's going on. Because I've known several cases where people have scheduled posts and then the post went out after something in the news changed or something in the world changed.
Yeah.
And then they've been lambasted, rightfully so, for the tweet that went out the door.
Yeah, there's kind of some controversy about that. I mean, yes, if we were tweeting when we saw 9/11 happen, no, stop. We pause all, most good social media managers pause all of that stuff. Okay. Some clients don't want you to pause it, you know? So I differentiate myself from a manager to a marketer, because I use the insight that I get on Twitter to inform my clients and give them ideas for content. Or maybe your site doesn't say this and such, because otherwise you wouldn't be getting that question, right? So yeah, I think you should. I do. If things are getting weird and I'm like, whatever, I just turn off Revival Post, you know, and I don't, because it comes over as tone deaf. And there are tragedies. We do have hurricanes and things like that, you know, natural disasters, the people storming the capital of the United States, things like that are really bad. So it depends on where you are too in your business. So in San Antonio, we are a city where people from Houston and Corpus Christi from the Gulf, they evacuate for hurricanes here. Yeah. So if there's a hurricane coming like Harvey did, then I'm not going to be tweeting about stuff. I'm going to be retweeting FEMA and things like that. You know, I'm going to be retweeting the city of San Antonio evacuation things. I'm going to be helpful. I'm not going to be talking about buying my book.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there's a time and a place for everything. I mean, and you know, you got to be in sync, because we all know what's going overseas in Afghanistan right now. It's hard to stay away from that mess, and I think you got to make sure you're not tone deaf. In terms of business to business, we know Twitter works really well. Do you think it works well in a business to consumer, or do you think, except for support, or do you think that can work as well?
Oh, I don't do those accounts. I specialize in B2B, but I think it works as a consumer myself. You know, I was asking a friend for an Asian restaurant recommendation. I found their website. I checked out their social media. They're on Twitter. I was like, oh my gosh, those sound so good. And they were like, you got to come in here and get them. You know, already I feel like I'm welcome. You know, when you have retail opportunities, you can say, show us this tweet and we'll give you a free cookie. And then, you know, you have more, more direct data, you know, or closer to it, because everybody's after the first click lead. It doesn't exist. It's like the abominable snowman. It yeah. almost never happens. It's still 7 to 10 touches. Doesn't matter what media it is. You know, people are still using billboards, Rob. Billboards.
Right. Oh, I know.
I was on a date the other day, and my friend really likes IPA. And he was like, oh, man, they didn't get an IPA, but they got Yingling. And I'm like, what the heck is Yingling? And he's like, don't you know what this beer is? And I'm like, I don't know. He goes, why? I don't understand why they can't get an IPA. Then all of a sudden, I'm seeing billboards for Yingling. I keep seeing all these bars around here having Yingling. I mean, Yingling is pushing their distribution in Central Texas or South Texas right now, in Texas. So, okay. Yeah, it's an all-out assault because marketing is war. Right? You're trying to get the territory. So yeah. They're pushing it. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll try a Yingling.
Yeah.
You know, instead of a McConaughey's. It just depends on your demographic.
I would agree. I think, you know, it's funny. I know when I've had support problems with companies, where do I go?
Twitter.
Every time. I mean, Rogers Communications, they actually give, and we all know what communications companies are. And one of the things I've learned in Canada is when I have problems, their communications team has more latitude than a rep on the phone. So yeah. I'll go there every time because especially if I've got a big problem. And they kind of, and I'm sure they look at my account and say, oh, this guy's got 16,000 followers. We need to fix this like now. Yeah. So I think.
Well, as somebody who manages for other companies, I try to make that my last resort because yeah. I'm like, listen, if you guys aren't doing your support 24/7, and I still can't understand why WordPress companies don't have 7-day support hours. Like, no. Get a part-time person on the weekend or stop selling in different time zones. Because they come on the weekend, they're building a website, they're like, I need help. And I'm like, oh, sorry, we only do this Monday to Friday, 9 to 5 Central, 9 to 5 Eastern, 9 to 5 Pacific.
9 to 5 Australian time. Right?
It's a problem.
Yeah, it's a big problem. What's the one thing on Twitter that you wish B2B companies would do better?
Oh, geez. Stop retweeting themselves. Follow people back. I'm a big believer in following people back.
I know you are.
Yep. Because that's how you build relationships. You can't even build your account, really, unless you're following people back. I don't know how people are having these giant accounts because I think what they're doing is dropping followers because their home feed is unmanageable. And then I say, you don't know how to use lists. Twitter lists and the reply button are two things that most people don't use on Twitter that are very valuable to the operations of your business. Like I said, like I gave a talk in WordCamp Nijmegen in the Netherlands 3 years ago, literally 3 years ago. And I talked to my friends about this and they were like, well, what do you mean a persona is a bias? I'm like, okay, everybody thinks the Bob, the WordPress developer, is 25, lives in his mom's basement, plays video games, drinks IPA, and watches, you know, Marvel movies, okay?
Where have I seen this?
Right? And so, and I was talking to two guys about this, and they said, oh, I used to be Bob. I go, right, but now you like wine, you own a home, you run a business, and your favorite movie is Shawshank Redemption.
Yep.
We evolve as people. And so when you make these personas of these fictional people that you think are in your audience. Why would you do that when you can just read the people's tweets? That's why it's so important to list them. And I don't understand, Rob, in WordPress, where we're working with databases and actions and filters, you know, filters and hooks, I mean. And why do you not understand that if I put you on a list of, you know, users and I read those tweets, I know what you like.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. It's knowing what, and it's not hard on Twitter to figure out what people like.
Right. Everybody knows Joshua Strubble from Pagely likes single malt scotch.
Yep.
Because he tweets about it.
So I'll give you an example. I sent my friend Joe Casabono, I emailed to follow up on something, and I said, by the way, you must be really happy about how your New York Yankees are doing these days. Joe is a staunch New York Yankees fan. He tweets about it every night.
Right. Because you know? He's a person. And that's the other thing that businesses don't do well. They need to show a personality. You need to have something that people can latch onto. Otherwise, they're not going to have anything to talk about, you know? If I were talking to Joe about the Yankees, I would like pull something out of my brain and be like, well, I'm reading this book right now called The Old Man and the Sea, and they keep talking about the great DiMaggio. Do you think that any current players are like DiMaggio? Yeah. Or is that an ideal that can't be lived toward? You know, I'm sure he has an opinion on that.
Oh, I'm sure he does. Knowing Joe, he's got an opinion on a lot. But yeah, it's a valid point. You get to know what people like and how they like it. And I think that's, if brands were smart, they would look at their followers and they would actually start to figure out what their followers liked and didn't like. And then they could adjust their marketing and their products accordingly from
right.
that
and,
point
on. You know, and then you find out what is their biggest pain point. It's not this, it's that. You never even thought about it, because product developers think about a specific problem and then they solve it. But then they're so into their own product, they don't have any outside influence anymore. They're no longer in the real world.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree to that. Hashtags. We all know a little bit about hashtags. Do you think they're overused, underused, abused? Is a good way to put it. What's your take on hashtags?
I think that people don't understand what hashtags are, Rob, essentially. They see people doing it. It's a funny skit with Justin Timberlake and whatever his name is that I forgot. And, you know, like, but hashtags started on Twitter.
Yes.
Pound sign with a word for a Twitter chat to filter for a keyword. I explain it in one of my Guru Minute videos. The hashtags are like looking up in the phone book. A lot of companies hashtag their own name, which is completely stupid, because that is not how people use hashtags. Hashtags are literally a link. When you click on that link, it gives you a filtered view of tweets that also use that hashtag. They are for search and discovery. That is it. Or filtering a conversation around something like a Twitter chat. So when people like come up with these hashtags, I'm like, first of all, that's stupid. But also, that's why you're not getting any reach. So here's the thing. So they started on Twitter and then they moved over to Instagram and they became sentences and sarcastic. Hashtags are great for sarcasm on Twitter and Instagram. Then Facebook, people were cross-posting to Facebook and LinkedIn. So they exist there and technically they work. But every time I teach a social media class, I ask, how many people use hashtags on Facebook? And they all raise their hand. And then I ask, how many of you click on a hashtag on Facebook? And usually one of 70, you know, a very small percentage, will raise their hand. People don't click on hashtags. This is why Instagram and LinkedIn allow you to follow a hashtag because that's essentially what you're doing for discovery. So I actually started using hashtags way at the bottom of my post on LinkedIn. I have a specific style of tweeting for this one purpose, not to distract from your call to action. First of all, okay, you want the words and you want the link and then you want a couple returns and put the hashtags, because what you want people to do is click on the link. So you don't want a bunch of blue things in your tweet. Blue is a link. We're all trained. We grew up with the internet. We're Gen Xers. Everybody younger than that knows. You touch it, you click on it, it takes you somewhere. So if you hashtag words, you know, in the tweet, first of all, they could click that and then go down a whole nother rabbit hole and they're not even in your tweet anymore. You lost them. In fact, you didn't just lose them, you sent them away.
Yep.
And it's also very difficult to read and super annoying for a screen reader or Siri or Google or Alexa reading to you.
Yep. That's a bit of a problem too, because one of the things you mentioned, a screen reader, we all forget about is accessibility. And I think, we'll get to your book in a bit, but accessibility, especially with nonprofits, is a big deal and is actually mandated in many, many places, including in the province of Ontario. So
yeah,
it's a bit of an issue. And I think we're getting to the point where people are forgetting about accessibility, and that's not a good move, in my opinion.
Right, and that's why I don't like overusing emoji either in tweets, because when in the screen reader or Alexa or Siri reads that to you, which a lot of people have that read to them, not just people with vision issues, they prefer it. They're auditory in nature. It's like a monkey covering face, monkey covering eyes, monkey. I mean, it's laborious. You don't even know what people are saying anymore. It's just stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, a GIF on Twitter is extra real estate and you can see more emotion. See, that's the other thing. So I'm 48. Last year I paid for LASIK. So I literally have 20/20 vision.
That's
and
awesome.
On my phone, I can't. Some of those emojis are too small. You cannot enlarge them.
Yeah. On a phone, I wear progressive glasses, and on a phone, I find emojis awful, even with progressives. I really do. And it's just, I just wish people wouldn't do it, to say the least. Before we move on, what do you think in Twitter is the value of DMs or direct messages? When should they be used? When shouldn't they be used? I know one of my big quorums is I get really frustrated with people follow you, and what's the first thing I get in my inbox? A DM saying, buy my product. And to me, that's not the right way to, as a marketer, to do marketing. I'll never do marketing that way. And I tend to be very quick on the go away ban button, and I don't care what the platform is. Do you have any take on when DMs should be used, when they shouldn't be used, beyond a personal conversation?
Auto DMs are cold calling, you know, it's spammy. Yep. I think it's a mistake. And maybe if your product can afford the attrition that will happen because of it, and you have enough volume, okay, whatever. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Applies to almost everything in life, including auto DMs. DMs can be really good for, client communications. Like, so I spent the first 30 years of my career as a secretary.
Okay.
And, pretty much however you want to communicate with me, clients, whether except, smoke signals and Morse code, I'm fine with. People used to laugh that the 80-year-old would come in with a paper check to pay for his tenant improvements. And I was like, Hey, if Bob wants to come in with a paper check to give us $85,000, I'm fine with that. Oh, if he wants me to fax him an invoice or mail him his contract, I'm going to do that because we're about serving them. So my clients, the way my business is, I don't make them go into my communication platform. Some of them like email, some of them like Slack, some like Basecamp, some even have a Discord server. So, you know, it's however they want to communicate. So for me, if I have a client who gets a lot of emails and I just want to send them something like, hey, I do this all the time with my clients. Ooh, this might be something for you to, you know, comment on. Or, ooh, here's some insight. Or, hey, there's a speaking opportunity. I did all three of those things today.
Yep. Yeah.
So that's a good place for it.
I would agree with you. I think you hit the nail on the head. Is too many people in our positions try and force clients into doing things their way. And I personally think that's the biggest mistake going, because you're there to service the client, so not the client to service you. And that's always been my take. Is I know, like, away from Twitter, one of the things I've implemented in my business is a help desk system. Do you know, for 50% of my clients, I'm opening the tickets for them because they won't do it. They just won't do it.
Wow.
They prefer to communicate in other ways, and that's just the way it is. So you got to.
I mean, thank God for Zapier, right? I mean,
yeah.
Or Zapier. I'm sorry, Zapier makes it happen.
Zapier makes
like,
it.
Like, it's pretty bad when you have to like make the slogan, the pronunciation guide, because you name something Zapier with only one P instead of two. Anyway, like, yes, okay. So, but here's the thing, like, I don't get push notifications for Twitter, and I never will. And I recommend that nobody does that. I look at it when I want to look at it. So, but also I don't remember stuff there. Like, oh, if somebody DMs me there and it starts to become, let's schedule, will you do X, Y, and Z? And I'm like, you got to send me an email. I'm Gen X. My Asana Trello project management system is Gmail. So, you know, there's just too much. There's too much from too many different places. I am not making a Trello board for my life. It's not happening. Yep. If it comes to that, then I need less work.
I agree on that one. That is so true.
So apologies to everyone who I have ignored or forgotten about in DMs. I was just apologizing to somebody today who was asking me to do an AMA. And I said, I'm so sorry. I forgot about this because it's in a DM.
I agree. Last Twitter question before we move on. Should people do Twitter in a tool like Hootsuite, which you do, or should they use the native Twitter app? And I know on my phone, I actually prefer the native Twitter app. I'll tell you that now. So, but what's your take on that?
Yes. That's the fastest answer you got from me. So I use Hootsuite because I want to look at my lists.
Yes.
And because I manage client work. People were really upset, and I kind of was at first, that their plan that was $15 is like $79 now. But the LLC pays for it. So it's either going to Hootsuite or it's going to IRS. That's real life. Like, that's a business expense. But for a regular person, a free account is fine. It's a good way to look at your lists and to follow a hashtag in a column. However, if you're not using the native app, you will miss things. Like, people are like, what is Twitter Spaces? What are now defunct or sunsetted? What are fleets? Because you're only going to see that on the mobile app.
Yep.
You know, so I believe in using both. There is no tool that's great and does everything you need it to do. We in the software world like to think that there is the perfect tool, or as I say, we procrastinate doing something we know we should do by learning about all of the tools that we don't use. And so what I always say is the best tool is the one that you use.
I would agree. And the one, and I'm not, you know, and we've followed each other a long time. We've talked on social media. As you know, I'm not one for jumping tools around. I tend to lock my tool stack pretty down. And then once it's down, people say, well, this is better. And I'll say, yeah, so that's nice. Because at the end of the day, investing time in a new tool is not always the right approach. Like, for example, I don't know if you know, but I don't run Windows or run Mac. I run neither. And people shake their head at me. I run Linux in my agency, and I've been there for about 6 months. And somebody said to me, does it matter? And I said, well, I can do everything I want to do, and all the tools are cross-platform that I use, so it doesn't matter. And, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to use what works for you. And as I tell people who use Macs, and, you know, I've never owned an Apple since an Apple One. So that goes back like 40 years. Yeah. And I still have the Apple One, by the way, as a memento. Aww. And people laugh at me and they say, but you are so not an iOS guy. And I said, no, because I learned my tools. And once you learn how to master your tool, it doesn't matter at the end of the day, right?
Right. I mean, it's whatever you use.
Yeah.
Just get it done. I feel like people are always distracted by the shiny new object, and that's what it affects their productivity.
I would agree. So let's move on to your book. You co-authored a book with Warren called The Only Online Marketing Book You Need for Your Nonprofit. I've started reading it. I'm about a third of the way in, so that's good. The guy who has too many books to read in his Kindle library right now. I'm an avid reader, which I think you know. How did you guys develop the concept for the book, and why a book on nonprofits?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, so like I said, Warren and I have been working on client accounts for a while. And last year, we both started writing all these books. That's how. And then he said, hey, I want to do a series of online marketing for small businesses, schools, and nonprofits. What if we wrote them together and, combined our efforts instead of being super frustrated, Because it's sad. You write a book and then people don't buy it like you think they should. And then you're like, meh, meh. But that's not why I write. I was literally tweeting about that today. I write to teach. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, this will be great. It'll be fun. It was such a fun project. And so we wrote the first one on small business, and we did it in a Google Doc. And him being in Bremen, Germany, 7 hours ahead, I would write, then I'd go to bed, then he would write, then I'd go to bed. it made it really great to collaborate in Google Docs. Yeah. And then we did it together. We used his account, and Kindle allows you, the self-publishing kdp.amazon.com allows you to put other authors in there. And then he just PayPals me my cut of the royalties. Mm-hmm. And so both of us have a passion for all three of these subjects because we've both worked with these industries. But nonprofits, I used to be a board member of Women Who WP, which is a nonprofit. I have been on staff at churches. I have nonprofit clients. And I coach nonprofits. They're a business. What I see them doing wrong is not treating their nonprofit like a business. Mm-hmm. So that's where our subtitle came from. Like, it's a business, treat it like one. Like, you're an e-commerce store. This is stuff we used to say back when I was building Give from 2015 to 2017. This is an e-commerce platform. Stop, you need donor data. You need donor reports. You need to care about Giving Tuesday. If you don't know what Giving Tuesday is and you're in a nonprofit, you're leaving money on the table. Right.
Yep.
So, and then we reached out to people we know, Adrian Toby wrote the foreword for How to Market Your Plugin. So he's the founder of Groundhog.
I know Adrian actually really well. His father is one of the biggest digital marketing trainers in the Ontario area. So.
Yeah, his dad is awesome. His mom is awesome too. I love Nancy.
Yeah, you've met Nancy.
She's Twitter, but she's like
she's a doll, and I've taken. I don't know. I took a year of training through his dad. So, and Adrian's got his dad's smarts. He's a really. I remember when he started building Groundhog.
Oh, and, okay.
And talked to him about that at length when he was working on it, and him showing me some stuff. Yeah, he's a pretty remarkable young man.
Yeah, and so I reached out to him to. If you wanted to talk about how nonprofits should be using marketing automation. So he wrote a chapter for us.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's about doing something that's helpful to nonprofits and not being all blah-bitty, blah, 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 cliche, cliche, cliche. No, like here's the information you need to know. And it actually includes a whole chapter on Giving Tuesday and a link to my 40 Days to Giving Tuesday Google Sheet you copy to your drive for free, you know, because I have day by day from like October 20th or 21st, exactly what you should do to get ready for Giving Tuesday.
That's amazing. I think a lot of nonprofits too, where they get into trouble, and I've dealt with a number of them in my career of running an agency and even before. And I've sat on, like you, on nonprofit boards. I used to be very active in the Toronto community and enough in other areas. And they do, as far as I'm concerned, silly things internally. For example, what nonprofit, what business would allow their chief financial person to miss a board meeting and not submit financial statistics ahead of time? That's one of my biggest pet peeves. And where we've seen that in a lot of sports leagues, which are also nonprofits, is embezzlement, how money's disappeared.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen this time and time again. I was very involved in the lacrosse community, and one of the biggest lacrosse organizations in the greater Toronto area had $150,000 stolen because their treasurer missed three board meetings. You know,
yeah, that's not okay. You know, you have to care not just about the cause or the organization. You have to care about it as a business, and that's what they don't do. Or like on Giving Tuesday, nonprofits will just, you know, say, "Oh, we need money." Well, so everybody needs money, but for what? Yeah. Be specific. What's my money going to do? You know, is it going to help build a well? You know, is it going to give a kid a backpack? What is it happening with this money? And make it specific. And there's, with Give being free, GiveWP, with it being free, there's no reason why every nonprofit shouldn't be using it who uses WordPress and, you know, and making those donation forms very specific to the campaign. The money can go to the same bank account. But if you don't do different donation forms, you're not going to be able to, you know, people won't, they don't trust sending money to already big organization, you know, or to somebody they don't know.
Yeah, it's true. And I think, honestly, where nonprofits get into trouble is they truly don't budget for this kind of stuff. They say, "Oh, we have an event to do." Well, that's nice. Do you not realize being promoting the event is part of your cost?
That you and claiming that they're broke all the time.
I had that story with a client that I worked with, and his salary, and I won't mention a nonprofit or who, was over $100,000. And I said, "So did you take a salary cut this year?" And he said to me, "Excuse me." I said, "I'm serious. You're claiming you can't. You need me to drop my contract price. Did you take a 20% salary cut this year?" And he just kind of looked at me and said, and grumbled at me and said, "I'm serious. You're asking me to do that. Where's your salary cut?"
Right.
And this is why I think nonprofits sometimes have a tough time getting good expertise because they claim they're broke all the time.
Oh, right. And the thing is, there's a difference between budget and money. Like, if you have money, I don't care what your budget is. Your budget's an arbitrary number. Make more budget, okay? If you want it to happen, but don't, like, emotionally strong arm the rest of us to help you for free, you know? Yeah. Be serious about what you want. You're collecting donations.
Yeah, it's like
you have to market.
We have a nonprofit organization in the greater Toronto area called the United Way. There's United Ways all over the place. And one of the problems I have with the United Way is, from a donor standpoint, is their operational budget is 60% of all money taken in.
Right.
So I kind of look at that as a donor and I say, okay, so if I'm going to donate to an umbrella organization, wouldn't I be better off calling the organization and giving them my money instead of giving it to the United Way and paying, you know?
Well, I mean, you're trusting them to vet people. I mean, one of the things that bugs me, and I'm not necessarily a total greenie, but I'm a hippie from California raised by hippies, you know, like I am donating to the Nature Conservancy, I never say that word right, and the World Wildlife Foundation. Yep. Why are y'all printing magazines and mailing them to me? Why can't I opt out?
Yep.
That is a waste, an enormous, enormous waste of money. Not to mention paper. Okay, like, yeah, photographs of the animals are beautiful, but allow me to choose to not receive the magazine and just look at your website.
Yeah.
It makes me want to stop donating.
Yeah, I would agree. In chapter 5 of your book, you talk about CMSs a little bit. And you throw in, and we all know WordPress, depending on what stat you want to listen to today, is somewhere between 40 and 45% of the CMS market on the internet right now, give or take. And one of the things you focused on, a small focus on, was you mentioned Drupal on like two pages. Why Drupal?
Oh my gosh. Warren is a huge fan of Drupal. Okay. He used to work in an agency in Canada, actually. He's Canadian.
I know he is.
you always know when people say house, where they're really from. But he's like, WordPress is fine, but if you're at enterprise level, sorry, you need Drupal. And a lot of these bigger foundations, they need to consider it. Because I was like, we both work with WordPress mostly. Why are we doing this? He goes, Bridget, these bigger foundations need Drupal. It's important for them to consider it as a legitimate choice. I mean, we didn't do Typo 3 just because it's popular in Germany, but like Drupal is a tool that is very useful for certain niches, you know, niches, whatever. This is a problem when you read all day, Robert. You really know how things are pronounced.
I know I read too much, so I'm there. So that's an interesting take on it, because I think, you know, I personally, not to disagree, but I think there's some pretty big sites running WordPress. I mean,
well, we know there are.
Whitehouse.gov comes to mind right away.
Right. The national parks.
Purdue University, it goes on.
Yeah, okay, Rolling Stone. The thing is, we love WordPress, but Warren felt that the need to say, here's another option, especially because he has such a big expertise there. So I'm like, whatever. It's your book. You don't have to like, one of the things that was really great about working on this project is we had to kind of compromise on a lot of things. So we went with UK spelling.
Yep.
We went with punctuation inside the quotes. So it's kind of a mix, you know, like the UK way is not the same as the American way, right? But
nor the Canadian way always, by the way.
Right. Right. And so it was really fun, like, to go through and edit it and do the tonality and talk about, you know, what's different. And so we literally copied the Google Doc from the first one and then put it in a different drive and everything for nonprofits. And then I was like, this is missing Giving Tuesday. This is missing this. And so we started with that skeleton of the small business book. This one is so much better. It's so good. I'm like, we're going to have a kind of a hard time not keeping Giving Tuesday in for the schools, because a lot of schools are nonprofits, but yeah. It's just, you know, it's so important. And Giving Tuesday is also a really good way to co-market with a nonprofit.
That's true.
As a for-profit business. So, it was a great experience and I really enjoyed it. I think it made me a better writer. I mean, you can interview Warren and ask him what he thinks. If he's like, Bridget's driving me crazy.
Actually, Warren and I are talking as soon as I see his latest book he did on his own. So yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, we are down the road. I really like him. I think you both bring a lot to the table. What's the biggest takeaway out of this book, do you think? I mean, you kind of roadmap for the reader, the reader who's confused. Like you talk about how to build relationships. You talk about the technical stuff. You talk about how to market. What is the biggest takeaway out of the book?
What our intent is that it's a reference manual.
Yep.
You know, I have everybody writes, you know, and I keep that because if I want to refresh myself, I go and look at that chapter. It's not a novel, you know, it's nonfiction, but it's for helping, you know, like, oh yeah, what was that chapter again? Because we're about to hire somebody. So we wanted it to be a base level education so that when nonprofits do hire internal employees or vendors, they have enough base understanding of marketing and the tools to integrate with one another, as well as the mindset of you are a business, you have a bank account, you have e-commerce, and sometimes they have a store also, and you have to file tax returns. So you need to think of it like a business. Stop thinking of it as, you know, your cause. Your cause is important, but you have three audiences: the donors, the volunteers, and the recipients of the cause. Those three things. So it's the mindset of your three-prong audience, as well as it being there when you need it as a reference manual.
Yeah, I would agree. So true. This conversation's been great. If somebody wants to reach out to you, what is the best way to get a hold of you? And what projects do you have coming down besides another book?
I'm trying to get this finished. I'm behind my own little schedule, but I'm working on the residential contractor pack for Launch with Words.
Yep.
I've also contracted with Ryan Kinney to trademark Launch with Words, which has been filed. That's my kind of product. One of my products besides my book and is my plugin, Launch with Words. And also Warren and I are doing another book this year. I have an idea for another book for myself that's more inspirational, but really I'm just going to focus on Launch with Words besides my client work this year. It's been a really great conversation and I appreciate all the subjects we've covered. Like, I can't imagine the tweets. You want to hear Bridget coming out as a bisexual, being a former pastor's wife, and her thoughts on Twitter not banning the Taliban? Listen.
Yeah. more power to you. Let the tweets come. There's an old saying that no publicity is bad publicity, and silence is worse than negative publicity.
So as someone who experienced some bad publicity, I'm going to disagree with that. However,
I'm sure.
But you know what I mean? Like, we are whole people, Rob. We're whole people. We're businesses. But the more that we appreciate one another for the things that we have in common, instead of focusing on the differences, especially now where we're not even sure how to be humans with one another, is important. My philosophy is, if you invest in people, they'll invest in you.
So true. Thanks for all your time, Bridget. Have an amazing day.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
A very special thank you to Bridget Willard for joining me on this podcast. If you want to tweet at Bridget, you can tweet at her at Bridget M. Willard. Say hello. She'll be glad to hear from you. Thanks for listening to the STM Show. The show is a production of Stunning Digital Marketing, and all rights are reserved. Rob can be reached by email at vip@stunningdigitalmarketing.com, on Twitter at Rob Cairns, on his website, stunningdigitalmarketing.com, and on his website, there's links to all his social media platforms. This show is dedicated to my late father, Bruce Cairns. Dad, I miss you very much. Keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Make your business succeed.